Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Sam from FPL Family.
And I'm Tom from Fantasy Football Scout.
Tom, this is your debut on the Off the Bench podcast. I'm delighted to have you on with me this week. And it was a very big week for FPL. Erling Haaland was captained by over 7 million managers, and alongside Phil Foden, they were benched for Manchester City, both coming on, however, for that dreaded one-point cameo. Now, you have been having a fantastic season, but how did Game Week 23 go?
It was better than previous ones, to be fair. I had a bit of a rough festive period. The festive fixtures weren't very kind to me, basically built over selling Thiago for Bowen before he scored 5 times in about 4 days. So that kind of doubled, tripled my rank. But yeah, Game Week 23 was decent. I got 53. I got back up to about 110K. Enzo, Rodgers, Dorgu with that brilliant goal, and Jarrod Bowen, who obviously has caused me a bit of pain in recent weeks, finally did something on Saturday lunchtime. And Thiago didn't score this week, which made it all the sweeter. But yeah, how was your game week?
It was decidedly meh this week. I think it started off okay. I had Semenyo and Gehi with their returns, and I thought, okay, maybe we're going to get somewhere. I'd had the captain's armband on Verts, and I very nearly went for Semenyo. Wished I had in the end, because, and we'll talk about it later, but I think Salah's performance and just Salah being back in that Liverpool team has had a bit of a detrimental impact on Verts over the last couple of matches in both the Champions League and in the Premier League itself. I had Enzo's points and Rodgers, both of them doing well. So those were nice. Outside of that, though, I managed to bench Mickey van der Ven, which, I mean, this is coming from me as well. I'm his biggest fan, and that was a bit of a disaster.
I couldn't believe he was still in your wildcard.
Well, I don't think he'll ever leave, Tom, to be honest. But he was on my first bench slot, and I really didn't want to bench him. I went back and forwards all week, and in the end, I was kind of like deciding between him and Dominic Calvert-Lewin to go on the bench. And eventually, I decided that playing Dominic Calvert-Lewin against Everton on Monday night had a lot of greater appeal. And to be honest, I didn't trust the Spurs clean sheet, which didn't stick as it goes anyway. So I had him alongside Dubravka and Senesi all on the bench, all with returns, which feels a bit difficult. So it was all right. It was a bit of a grey arrow. It's very, very small red on a week where I actually thought that it might go well, which is always even more frustrating when you think, actually, my team looks quite nice for this week. And I've got benching headaches. It just so happens I got all my benching headaches the wrong way around and should have played all the ones I benched. So that was fun. But anyway, let's get into these games, shall we? Shall we start with Manchester City? Because I think that's probably the biggest talking, or one of the biggest talking points of the week then. Erling Haaland and Phil Foden both bench, both on for 1 point cameos. What did you make of the City performance in this one?
I'd say routine, probably the word that comes out. I think obviously the team sheet had a couple of big shocks in it. It remains to be seen. I don't know. I'm kind of on the side of the debate that it was kind of just a 1 week kind of warning shot to them that they really need to buck up their ideas. And they'll be, I'm sure Haaland for sure will be back in the team tomorrow night in the Champions League, and probably, luckily for you, on Saturday or Sunday, not sure, but against
Sunday
Tottenham.
Afternoon, yeah.
And he's probably still the best captain for next week. But Foden, I think, is a bit trickier. There's obviously a bit more competition around for those positions. Reinders, Bernardo Silva. Pep spoke about Bernardo Silva, how he's, like, he said something like he's played the most minutes in the 10 years that he's been there, and he just feels a lot more comfortable with him in the team. And yeah, it was obviously, like, Haaland just doesn't get benched, and he did this week. So, as you said, 7 million managers there, just getting a point.
Yeah, and I think that's frustrating, isn't it? If you had the armband on him, maybe it was a little bit unexpected. Maybe we weren't kind of expecting that to happen. However, we did have Marmoush back from AFCON. Maybe it was an opportunity amongst what is a very busy period for Manchester City with the final Champions League stage game in midweek this week, and then obviously the EFL Cup semi-final second leg in midweek the following week, and then a game against Tottenham, where they always have difficulties against us for some unknown reason, because we're often not very good when we play them and then seem to pull out a performance when we do. So maybe this was the opportunity that Pep needed to just give Haaland a little bit of a rest. Lots of managers went into this one with more than 3 Manchester City assets, because they already owned Semenyo, they already owned Gehi, and then as they came across into that Manchester City lineup, they ended up with four or five Manchester City players. Now, if you had the O'Reilly, Gehi, Semenyo combination this week, you've been doing really well. But obviously, going into next week, if you do have more than three Man City assets and you do want to make a transfer, you will have to sell a Manchester City asset in order to do it. Is Foden, and probably O'Reilly as well, are they the two the most obvious sells at Man City, do you think, now?
Yeah, I think Foden's a pretty obvious sell, having said that, because I've already done it. But I guess like someone like Semenyo is, I mean, he's the top scorer midfielder in the game, and we've seen with Pep in the past and Foden in the past that if you're riding the wave of form with Man City, he keeps you in the team because, as he was saying before the game, goals and assists are the most important thing. And Semenyo, I think if you own Semenyo, you just keep him now until the form ends and maybe Shirky takes over in a few weeks, like as we've seen with Foden. O'Reilly is a little bit trickier, partly because he keeps getting outscored by Nunes, but also he did start against Wolves, and I don't think there's anything to suggest he's not the first choice left back. Aitnori basically had half a season where he didn't play. So yeah, I guess probably a question of priority. And if you've got Gehi, probably keep as well, because he, with all their problems at centre back, he looks pretty nailed on for the foreseeable.
Yeah, Gehi, Semenyo and Haaland are my three Man City assets, and I'm happy to hold them despite the fact that they're playing against my club this week. I'm even more inclined to hold them. Just quickly from a Wolves perspective then, obviously nothing for them in this one, but maybe they can consider themselves a little bit unlucky. Mascara had more shots than anyone in the game week with five this week, so potentially that Man City clean sheet could have gone. I think if you have Wolves assets, if you have a Mane in your team, then it's fine to hold them. But I don't think we'd be prioritising transferring in a Wolves asset, despite the fact that their performances are actually significantly improving.
No, Mane's the one because of his price. But yeah, apart from that, I think it's look elsewhere.
Yeah, and we can talk a little bit later about Kroupi and Bournemouth, because maybe that's a better option anyway. The other big talking points of the week, of course, was the game between Arsenal and Manchester United. Now, many FPL managers a couple of weeks ago pondering, and myself included when I was wildcarding, pondering on getting Bruno. But those two fixtures, that game against Manchester City and then this one against Arsenal, were just slightly off-putting. And in the end, I decided I'd just wait a couple of weeks and then I'll get Bruno at that point. Now, that looks like a terrible decision on reflection, because across these two game weeks, Bruno Fernandes has been fantastic coming back into the team, getting his attacking returns locked in. I think for me, and probably for most of the FPL community, judging the markets at the moment, he is the priority buy ahead of game week 24.
Yeah, he's the most transferred in player, and he was the most transferred in player last week as well, despite playing Arsenal. And his positioning, obviously, that's probably the most interesting thing, is his positioning. He's playing almost up with Mbeumo, the highest sort of position player in that team. I guess they've had two games against City and Arsenal, so, you know, two tough games. Maybe against Fulham, obviously Cunha's there, Sesko's there, Dorgu's flagged. So there could be some attacking changes that maybe pushes Bruno back slightly, but he just looks as on it as he has done this season. And if it weren't for his injury, I'm sure he'd be challenging Semenyo at the top of the point scoring list for midfielders.
Yeah, for sure. And if you think back into that early part of the season, we had those couple of penalty misses as well. And if they go in, then you're talking about a very, very different season for Bruno. I don't have him yet. In fact, I don't have any Manchester United assets at the moment because I didn't fancy them for the next couple of weeks. Frustratingly, on wildcard, I also saw Dorgu, having owned him for the 3 weeks previous, where he just picked up that assist. Since then, he's been phenomenal. He was on my transfer back in list for this week, obviously flagged. So I'm going to just wait on him and see where we are at the end of this week and what Carrick has to say about him. He was pictured with ice on his hamstring, but there was some conversation that maybe it's just cramp. But if it's not just cramp and it is something, you know, more than that, more significant, then it's something to be mindful of, because, you know, hamstring injuries aren't often very short term. So one to watch with Dorgu. But I think if Carrick rules him fit at the end of the week, he is a transfer in that will go up in price a lot over the next couple of weeks as the Manchester United fixtures swing for the better. I am pondering on doubling up on the Manchester United midfield, because Bruno Fernandes is still actually quite lowly owned despite having taken a lot of new owners on board in the last couple of weeks, but pairing him with Mbeumo feels like it might be the way to go. He's got a couple of goals in the last 2 weeks. This week was his third double-digit haul of the season, despite the fact he's been off at AFCON for a while. Any love for the double up of the Manchester United attack?
Yeah, definitely. I think before AFCON, lots of people were on it. I think I had Mbeumo for a couple of weeks. And yeah, I know you just said there that Bruno's quite lowly owned. I think among engaged managers, he's going to skyrocket this week.
Oh, so massively,
I think having Mbeumo as, you know, Bruno may become slightly irrelevant if he does keep performing and become sort of Haaland ownership levels. So I think having Mbeumo there as a second kind of a sword to Bruno's shield would be, is going to be a really, really useful option and probably differentiates you a little bit from other managers.
Let's talk about Arsenal then, because I think most FPL managers, myself included, when I was debating how to play Mickey van der Ven against Burnley this week, one of the things I didn't consider and maybe should have is benching either of my Arsenal defenders. So I have both Gabriel and Timber. Now, maybe Timber's a little bit unlucky right at the beginning of that game not to get an attack in return. I kind of was hoping that he might have got a touch on that and it might have been his goal rather than the own goal that it went down as in the end. No such luck. But that is part of the reason why I never want to bench an Arsenal defender, because they always have this upside that comes with them, both of them. Now, this week, no upside really. And in fact, I went into this game with Gabriel, Timber and Rice and did not expect to be coming out of that with just 3 points from the three of them. No need to panic on Arsenal, though, I think is the word. Look at it. Maybe unless you have Bukayo Saka, is he becoming increasingly difficult to hold now?
I mean, I think it's kind of double-sided. The first side is I've never been too sort of enamored by his fantasy prospects, in the sense that I don't think he's very explosive. And this season we've seen Madueke take some minutes off him and start against Forest the week before this one. But the flip side is there's not actually that many other premium players that are performing. Like, there's no Palmer, kind of. There's no, up until this week, there was no Salah. Obviously, Bruno's back now, so I guess Saka to Bruno would be a decent move. But lots of people have lots of money. I don't feel like Saka would be a priority sell, but if you need money, going to Rice is a straightforward thing to do for him. And yeah, as you said on Timber, like, you talk about benching him, but the fact he was just popping up in the 6-yard box and the furthest forward Arsenal player just kind of says why he's a good pick. And then obviously you're never going to bench Gabriel.
No.
You saw Saka swinging in those dangerous corners, as he often does.
Yeah, I think it's difficult with Arsenal, because obviously this is a result that I wasn't expecting. I thought Manchester United would go and give them a good game, but I wasn't expecting this one. And I think, you know, it seems to be the case, doesn't it? Obviously, because the Arsenal assets are hugely popular in FPL, that when they have a bad week, it brings down the average of the game week, because most people have at least two, most managers three Arsenal assets in this one. Really, it was only Moreno in this one, if you were on Arsenal, that kind of was making a big difference to you. That's 4 goals and 3 assists for him this season so far. That's just 2 away from his 9 attacking returns record from last season. So he was the one to own this week if you had an Arsenal player, but equally, with the minutes rotation, I don't think he's a player that you're going to own more long term. Let's move on to your club then, Chelsea. So a really good result for Chelsea, but there will be a lot of FPL managers that are very disappointed to see that Chelsea clean sheet go, despite the fact that actually Crystal Palace were second for shots on goal this game week. Only Spurs had had more. So interesting to see Palace attacking, but disappointing if you've got a Chelsea defender.
Yeah, I was one of those with Sanchez. He was on course for a massive haul, made some brilliant saves, including just before the goal. He made a brilliant save, but yeah, that was unfortunate. And we are conceding quite a lot of shots at the minute. Our defensive numbers are not that good, but our fixtures are really good. So that kind of, you know, if Sanchez gets a little bit of luck, which he nearly did, he can make 5 or 6 saves and get a really big haul. And he's pretty cheap as well, 4.9. But obviously Chalobah will be another popular player that people were disappointed with, but he did get DEFCONs again. I think he's still the second highest scoring defender behind Gabriel. So he's having a brilliant season.
And I think that's one of the things, isn't it, about, you know, conceding a lot of shots. It potentially does mean that you're more likely to concede the clean sheet. However, it also means that you're more likely to get DEFCON, because that means that the team you're playing against is attacking, and therefore as a defender, you're more likely to pick up those additional points. So I think if you're a Talibur owner, you're kind of happy that the DEFCON's there, because it means that you're starting at four. And obviously if the clean sheet sticks, then you're into a big number, which would have been really, really nice for his owners. Let's talk about João Pedro for a minute, because if we think back to the beginning of the season, João Pedro was just a phenomenal FPL asset. You had to have him. He was scoring for fun. And then he seemed to kind of just disappear off the FPL radar for quite a long time. But now we've got four attacking returns in his last four starts. Under the new manager, he does seem to be first choice, despite there being a conversation around Liam Delap and whether Liam Delap, having had an existing relationship with the new manager, might take some of those minutes. I mean, João Pedro's coming off at the end of the games for Delap, but given that there's very little in the forward line in FPL right now that you would want to invest in, would it be mad to go back to João Pedro?
I don't think it would be mad. I think you're looking at these next four fixtures, I think any Chelsea attacker could go off big time. We've got four of the bottom five in the next four. It's a bit of a mouthful, but four relegation threatened sides. Mm. Like you say, Delap has been on the bench. He has also been quite ill. I think it was the Brentford game he was on the bench for that Rosinha said he went down like the night before.
Had a virus, didn't he?
Possibly think he would have started that. But with Chelsea, the most important games, arguably, maybe Rosinha sees it differently, but is Napoli in the cup and then Arsenal in the cup. And I do worry about that Wednesday, Saturday turnaround for West Ham. Maybe if Delap starts tomorrow night, then João Pedro looks like a go for Saturday. But if João Pedro plays again and Delap's on the bench, and then obviously the Arsenal game next week could go to extra time. Maybe that's wishful thinking on my part, but we've got to score first at the Emirates. But yeah, it's kind of the same with Estevao, who was amazing and Chelsea fans think should be in the team, but the manager keeps talking about how you have to look after him. He's only 18. Like, I just don't think there's any way he starts sort of three in a row, especially when Garnacho didn't even get used in that game. I'm guessing he's being saved for Napoli, but I think with João Pedro, if you need a striker at that value, I think you can be confident maybe three out of four starts. So yeah, maybe that is enough. Do you think that's enough? I don't know.
It's really hard with Chelsea, which is the reason I asked you the question, because I went for Enzo Fernandez on my wild card and I'm happy that I did. He feels like the right investment. Yeah. So I'm happy I did that. Obviously, there's no Palmer on the pitch this week, so you get a penalty, he scores it. I'm very happy with the points that I got out of him this time around. I would like to further my investment in Chelsea. Chalobah is definitely an option. He was an option that I looked at on wildcard. And with the transfer window open, I was just a little bit worried about some speculation around a new centre-back coming into Chelsea and what that might mean for Chalobah and Chalobah's minutes. But if that doesn't happen, then again, he feels like a pretty much one of those locked players. Same with Sanchez now in goal. It kind of feels like you guaranteed they're going to start. Whereas around that, Chelsea have got such a good squad of players that there's always the potential for rotation. And as you said, this nice block of fixtures in the Premier League where you look at it, and if you just look at the Premier League fixtures, they absolutely look prime for tripling up on Chelsea. The issue I have is that every time I look at those block of fixtures, I then put in the Champions League game and I put in the EFL Cup game. And then suddenly those fixtures just look less attractive because of the uncertainty around starts. Now, João Pedro is a player that I'm thinking about because maybe three of the four is enough. Maybe that is an acceptable amount as an FPL manager, because a lot of people will have held Thiago, particularly for the game against Forest that we'll talk about in a little while, where he didn't get anything and there'll be some disappointment there. I had Dominic Calvert-Lewin yesterday evening. We'll talk about him later. Maybe he's a little bit unlucky not to get something in that game on Monday night, but nonetheless, it's still a blank. And there isn't a lot in that kind of cheaper forward block that are really outstanding at the moment. You have to look a little bit higher in price in the sort of Ollie Watkins territory, maybe, before you're starting to see some regular returns. But João Pedro, we are starting to see those regular returns again. So it could be the right moment to go back there. And if I want to double up on the Chelsea attack for the next 4 weeks, then João Pedro, I think, feels like the safest way to do that alongside Enzo Fernandez. But I would put Enzo Fernandez as my top priority for a Chelsea attacker for the next four.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think João Pedro is the second best if you wish to take the risk. But yeah, you'd mentioned there the cup games, but also the Leeds game is midweek as well. So there is, you know, it's pretty relentless for Chelsea and lots of other teams as well.
Quick word on Crystal Palace. Daniel Munoz was back from injury. This was their first official game without Gaye. Obviously, he was still a Palace player the last time that they played in the Premier League. They did struggle in this one, but they were attacking. So there is still some attacking throughout there. There was a lot of conversation ahead of this one about when Daniel Munoz is back, let's go back there. For me, I now no longer have a Crystal Palace asset, despite having owned a lot of them over the course of this season. With the current form, I just don't think that they're worth the investment, particularly in the attacking positions, because there's so many better options in those midfielders than we're seeing from the Palace midfield right now.
I think let's see in a couple of weeks when they got Burnley and Wolves at home. Because I think if Sarr scores in one of the next two, he'll be very popular. Munoz, even against Chelsea, he was charging down the right. Again, like for Burnley and Wolves, I think he's going to be one of the best defensive picks. But obviously it's pretty short term and they could potentially blank later on in the season as well. So you have to put that into consideration. Chris Richards, who scored, is worth a shout at 4.4, I think. Partly because I've bought him to fund Bruno, but he couldn't have saved that goal for next week. But yeah, I think at 4.4, he's up there with the Sunderland guys in that price bracket.
Yeah, I mean, Burnley Wolves games are in 26 and 27. So you've got Nottingham Forest and Brighton before you get to those two. And then after that, it's Manchester United, Spurs, Leeds, Manchester City, Newcastle. So it's a tough run, but there are those two nice fixtures in there, as you say, in game weeks 26 and 27. So maybe there is an opportunity at that point. And of course, by that point, the transfer window will have closed. So we'll know exactly what Crystal Palace look like in terms of who they've signed to replace the players that they've lost and what that means for them moving forward. Let's go to Liverpool next, because again, I think this was a bit of a big talking point of the game week. Obviously, Bournemouth have, I mean, their fixture results recently have been ridiculous in terms of goals. There's been goal fests whenever Bournemouth have played. This marked Salah's Premier League return post AFCON. He picks up an assist. He was captained by just over 755,000 managers. Now, most of those, I think, will be, you know, players that maybe are less engaged and have that legacy captaincy on him from earlier on in the season. But nonetheless, he comes back into the team. He gets an assist. He didn't do enough to make me want to buy him in FPL. But what he did do is put me off owning Florian Wirtz. Because while Salah has been away at AFCON, I have really enjoyed owning Wirtz. He has been attacking. He's felt like the most important man in that team. He's had that kind of a big player talismanic approach to his game. When Salah comes back into the team this week, it felt like he stopped being that player and instead started just looking for Salah. And given Wirtz was my captain this week, I was incredibly frustrated watching this one, because every time Wirtz got in a good position, I was like, have a shot, have a shot. And last week he would have done, but this week he looked for Salah. I think it makes my decision really easy moving forward, because if Salah's going to continue to play, I do think it lessens the appeal of Wirtz in FPL. So I think the Wirtz to Bruno move is the transfer that I will make this week. But I don't know. For me, Liverpool just they looked a bit at sea again. So Boslai was there. That's his third double-digit haul of the season. Difficult one with Liverpool this week. Do you have any Liverpool assets?
Well, yeah, hearing you moan about your captain, at least he was on the pitch, because mine was on the bench. Ekitike didn't even start. Yeah, I think with Virtue, you take your points that you've had. He's what, got 3 10-pointers in 6 weeks. I think you take that and move on now. Ekitike, frustrating, but I think give him the benefit of the doubt and hold him. Because
are you going to hold?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I don't really see... Like Liverpool, you listen to Liverpool fans, they're so much happier when he's on the pitch, and they weren't very good without him, so...
No, but it is Newcastle, Man City. I mean, they are both at home.
I love that Newcastle fixture 2 days after PSG.
Yeah.
I think Newcastle will be knackered.
there's a great run for Liverpool coming up after that. The Newcastle fixture, maybe you're right, actually, after the Champions League, and Newcastle aren't travelling as well as they are at home. And we'll talk about them in a minute, because without Bruno, I thought they were lacking this week. And then it's Man City who, I mean, who knows really with Man City. We've had really hit and mixed performances from them. But after that, Sunderland, Nottingham Forest, West Ham, Wolves, Spurs, Brighton, Fulham, Everton. That's a great run of fixtures for Liverpool, which is why I've been reluctant to part ways with that. So I can understand the holding of Ekitike, but if managers didn't have a route to Bruno Fernandes without selling Ekitike for a downgrade, I mean, that still feels like something I would do.
Yeah, definitely. Bruno is the priority this week. But yeah, I mean, I think if you can hold Ekitike, I think he might turn out to be a little bit differential and be quite good, because I still think he's Liverpool's starting striker. And until he gets benched again, he's not a priority sell for me.
And I think when you listen to Slot, it was very much just a protection load thing. I think at the start of this season, they weren't expecting Ekitike to play as many minutes as they have. But obviously with the injury to Alexander Isak, he's been forced to play more games. And much like Chelsea, there's been a lot of fixtures for Liverpool over recent weeks. So maybe it's just a bit unfortunate for managers that captained Ekitike this week, that this is the week that he gets his benching. A conversation around Virgil van Dijk, I think we probably need to have, because this Liverpool defence has not been great. They've been conceding goals, a lot of goals, and they looked in disarray, to be honest, with the long throw at the end of the game. So, but then Virgil's there. He gets 12 clearances, blocks and interceptions, the most in the game week. So he also gets a goal. It's very difficult for managers to sell him. I think if you, I don't think you prioritise buying Virgil, but if you still have him in your team, he's a DEFCON magnet. He picks them up most weeks. And he does have this attacking threat from set pieces. So Virgil a hold, but definitely not a buy. Is that a fair statement?
Probably, being sensible about it. I would be so tempted to get Munoz if I had Van Dijk and a free transfer.
Interesting.
I just think, yeah, I love Munoz, how attacking he is. He's like a winger. I don't know, how much more evidence do you need that Liverpool's defence is not very good? Newcastle and City next to probably concede. I don't know. It's probably a question of priority. If you're sitting there with four transfers and Bruno Fernandes, then maybe you could do it. If you just bought Bruno with one transfer, you'd probably keep him.
Yeah. All right. Talking about bad defences, let's talk about my lot. Burnley 2, Spurs 2. Spurs had 18 shots on goal in this one, the most in the game. It was insane.
That's the positive.
That's the positive. Simmons and Solanke, sixth and seventh, respectively, for XG underachievers in this one with 0.51 and 0.48. They were good. They both of them played well. Having Dom Solanke back made a massive difference. Spurs just didn't really finish their chances. And yet again, we're relying on our centre-backs to score our goals. So Van de Ven with his seventh goal of the season in all comps, Romero with his sixth goal of the season in all competitions. That is borderline ridiculous. But these two continue to be in the right place at the right time. And especially Romero, late on in games, he almost plays as a number nine. He just decides to take himself out of the back line and play up front. Most of the time, this is because Spurs aren't winning the game. And so he goes and stands up there in the hope that something comes to him. But this is a phenomenal header, by the way. I mean, this isn't a football podcast, but it is a phenomenal header. He does really well, like a striker, but it's honestly infuriating. I have Van de Ven in my team. Obviously, as I mentioned at the beginning of this, I left him on the bench because I didn't think we would keep a clean sheet. But it's getting to a point where his attacking threat means I probably should, like Timber and Gabriel, just play him every week at this point. That said, the fixtures for Spurs are absolutely grim.
I'm being brutally honest.
No, they are grim. It's Manchester City at first on Sunday afternoon before Manchester United, Newcastle and Arsenal. The next 4 weeks are just dire for Spurs. And so I think from an FPL perspective, you stay well clear of any Spurs assets for the next few weeks. Maybe after the North London derby, let's see where Spurs are and revisit at that point. Because obviously, you know, there's a big important Champions League game to come in midweek this week as well. So maybe we see a little bit more rotation. Hopefully, by the time those four game weeks are played, we start to see some of our injured players come back from injury as well. It would be nice to have Kulusevski back in the fold over the next few weeks. So we'll see. I don't think there's a lot else to say about Spurs, to be honest, because I don't think they're a team that you're going to invest in. But shout out to Dubravka. 9 saves, 3 save points, a 5-pointer in a game where he's conceded 2 goals. If it wasn't for him, Spurs win this game comfortably. He was brilliant.
Yeah, he had a blinder on most people's benches.
Yeah, mine as well.
It's one of them, like, he never keeps clean sheets, but, you know, he has games like this where he makes an incredible amount of saves and beats lots of other goalkeepers, like beat Sanchez this week. Yeah, beat Verbruggen as well, who people kind of are rotating Dubravka with.
Mm.
But yeah, maybe in upcoming weeks against slightly tougher opponents, he is an option to play with the amount of saves that he makes and shots that they concede.
And I think that's the thing. Like, I had, there was a lot of goalkeeper debate in my house. And as those of you that listen to the official pod will know that me and goalkeepers this season have not really been friends. However, there was a lot of debate in my house because my husband has Verbruggen and Dubravka as a combination. And he decided that he didn't think either of them would keep a clean sheet. So we played Dubravka because of the potential upside from save points, which was absolutely the right decision. I was in a slightly difficult position because I've got Robin Roos as my first choice rotating goalkeeper. Now, Sunderland had they don't travel away as well, but it's against West Ham, who haven't been great this season. So I didn't really consider the fact that the amount of saves that they would make. In my head, I was just like, well, Sunderland have actually got a chance of a clean sheet. Now, actually, that was terrible decision-making on my part when you see the result that happened on Saturday lunchtime. But yeah, Dubravka is starting to feel like a goalkeeper that when I don't like the fixture that my main goalkeeper has got, he is an option because he regularly picks up this additional save points. That's, you know, back-to-back weeks of 5 points now. It's really nice from him, despite the fact that I was thoroughly annoyed that he pulled out a performance like that against my team. Let's move on then, because I don't think either of them are really big investments otherwise. Aston Villa and Newcastle, though, these are teams that managers are invested in. Morgan Rodgers with just an assist. And I say just an assist because I yet again felt a little bit disappointed not to get more points out of Morgan Rodgers for the second week in a row.
Ollie Watkins. Ignore the DEFCON. No, he got DEFCON for the first time.
He did get DEFCON.
Amazing.
But it's one of those things though, Tom, isn't it? I think, like, I watch him. I watched him in game week 22 and was like,
I feel
like I've been robbed. How has he not got anything? And then I watched him again in this one. And again, felt disappointed. And this is the right way to feel, though, as an FPL manager, right? I'd rather feel like this. I'd rather watch him play and think, my goodness, I feel disappointed that he's just got DEFCON and an assist. Because at that point, that suggests that he should have got a lot more from the game. So that bodes well moving forwards, I think. So I'm happy to own Rodgers. There's been some chatter around doubling up Rodgers by owning Ollie Watkins as well. And I think in part that's because there's not been a lot of other forward options in the game that have been really performing. The fixtures are quite nice for Aston Villa over the next few weeks. It's Brentford at home, Bournemouth away, Brighton at home, Leeds at home. So 3 games in the next 4 at home before Wolves. And then it's a bit more tough with Chelsea and Manchester City in 29 and 30. But they're quite a long way in the future. Any interest in the Aston Villa double up in the attack?
Not for me, just with all the transfer speculation that they might be getting another striker. I would say, like, we've seen Watkins miss out in the past, and I don't think the type of strikers that Villa are linked with are going to come and settle for 10 minutes off the bench. I think 65-minute subs could become sort of the norm, especially if they are going to maintain this title push and a Europa League push. And we know that Watkins has been carrying an issue for quite a while now. Rodgers, for me, though, great pick. Happy I've got him. Unlike you, I was happy with my 8 points because that assist. I mean, that assist was incredibly fortunate. He just passed it for an absolute worldie by Buendia. Although, to be fair, I was watching Chelsea, so maybe you saw him do a bit more than I did. But yeah, I mean, moving on to Newcastle, they disappointed. Gordon, again, racked up the XGI, but still can't score an open play Premier League goal. I think it's over a year now since his last. The strikers, obviously in a void, Visser, Voltomada, keep getting rotated. And then defenders, I don't think they're bad picks, but it probably just wasn't their day. And then obviously Lewis Hall lost his DEFCON that he had. So that was kind of the final nail in the coffin if you own Newcastle players this week.
Yeah, it's a bit like me with Van der Ven last week. I think the tale of this one from a Newcastle perspective is that Tonali, Barnes and Gordon were all in the top 0.6 for XG underachievers. So Tonali was at 0.63, Barnes at 0.57, and Gordon 0.53. So all three of them should and probably could have scored in this one. Hence why Martinez gets a bit of a haul in goal, because he's picking up his second double-digit haul of the season for his clean sheet, three bonus points and an additional save point in there as well. So when a goalkeeper gets that many points, a bit like we were just saying about Dubravka, it suggests that there should have been more for the team that they were playing against. And Newcastle may be a little bit unlucky. I don't think that they look as good without Bruno Guimarães. I think when he's not there, they just don't look quite right.
I don't think they've ever won a Premier League game without him.
Is that right? That's interesting. I
hope it's right. But yes, I'm pretty sure it's 9 games, I think.
Wow, that's interesting. Because they didn't look the same without him. They don't control the middle in the same way that they did. Now, this one actually was... It was fairly even, to be fair, and it probably could have gone either way, but Villa taking their chances, whereas defensively, Newcastle leaving a little bit to be desired. It was the reverse for Villa. You know, defensively, they played really well. So Rodgers, I'm happy to hold. Guimarães, you're going to have to wait and see. He's yellow flagged at the minute, so let's just wait and see where we are. Obviously, Newcastle have got a big Champions League game in midweek. So
yeah, he's popular, so you'll have to see.
Yeah, we're here from Eddie Howe, but I think if he's out again in midweek and then isn't going to be available for the weekend, he'll probably be a popular sell this week, especially as people look to get Bruno Fernandes, and midfielder spots are a bit at a premium right now because there's so many decent options. A game that surprised me then, Brentford 0, Nottingham Forest 2. I wasn't expecting this one. I'll be honest, when I was setting up my team for the week, I looked at my front nine and thought, this is the week I really regret not getting Thiago on wildcard. I went Dominic Calvert-Lewin instead. Maybe I should have gone João Pedro, but I went for Dominic Calvert-Lewin instead. And I looked at this fixture, and this was the fixture that I feared from a Brentford perspective, because it was that nice home fixture. After this, they now have a difficult run of Aston Villa away, Newcastle away, Arsenal at home, Brighton at home. Like, that's the next four aren't great. So what do managers do now with Thiago over the next 4 weeks? Is it a case of looking at this and going, I'll move to João Pedro and hope that I get three of the next four starts in the league? Do I move to somebody like, you know, do I downgrade him and take some money out, which managers might need to do if they're going to get Bruno Fernandes, although money doesn't seem to be so much of an issue this week? Or do you just hold him through these fixtures? What's your views on Thiago?
Having sold him over Christmas because he had a few rough games and Jared Bowen looked better. Also with the value as well, like, he's gone up a lot in price, 7.2 now. I think you hold him. Like, personally, I'm looking to buy him after Arsenal. That's around 27, 28 when he's got Brighton, Burnley, Bournemouth, Wolves, Leeds, Everton.
Mm.
So for 3 weeks, I mean, all he kind of needs is one goal to negate a transfer, I would say. And he's obviously got Villa and Newcastle next on penalties. His stats weren't awful in this game. I think he had about half an XG and a couple of shots. I'd probably keep him, to be fair.
Yeah, actually, it wasn't him that was really the XG underachiever for Brentford this week. It was Dango, who was top for XG underachievers in the game with 0.98. He came back, obviously, from AFCON, is making a difference and looked good in this one. So maybe don't panic on Thiago, but I think I'll be inclined to sell him for the next few. But then having said that, the last time I sold him, I did the same transfer as you did and got Jarrod Bowen, except I got back off Jarrod Bowen before he started returning again. So that's been fun. From a Forest perspective, maybe defensively, they're starting to find their feet a little bit. That's two clean sheets back to back now against Arsenal and against Brentford, teams that have been scoring goals in the league. So maybe we're starting to get to a point where we can trust Nottingham Forest defensively again. Because if we think back to the 24-25 season, they were brilliant for us in FPL. Not only did we have one of them, we often had two of them. And it was like, this is the way to go. This season has been very different. It's been very unsettled, but just maybe there's some green shoots of recovery coming here for Forest as well. So they aren't a team that I'm going to invest in straight away, but they are a team that I'm watching and just seeing what happens. Obviously, it's Crystal Palace up next. If they get another clean sheet against Crystal Palace this week, then I might look at it ahead of Leeds and Wolves. There might be some options there, but just one to keep on the radar, I think. I'll tell you what, though. going to talk about Harry Wilson next, because Harry Wilson is...
Do we have to?
I honestly...
He's killed me all Christmas, and then he gets an incredible free kick that he has absolutely no right to score from.
It's mad, isn't it? It is absolutely mad. So he scores the last minute winner against Brighton this week in Fulham's 2-1 victory. It's his third goal in his last four starts. He's got 14 attacking returns. That's only been bettered by Semenyo, who's got 16, and Bruno Fernandes, who's got 15. I didn't have him over Christmas and he killed me. I didn't get him on wildcard and he still continues to kill me. And it is so difficult because I look at him every week and I think I'd really like to own Harry Wilson and I have no idea how to fit him into my midfield, because when you've got players like Rice and Enzo and Rodgers and now Wirtz is going to go for Bruno, I'm really struggling to find a slot to put Harry Wilson in. But every week he continues to punish people that don't have him, and this is another big return for his owners. So he does have no right to score this. It's phenomenal. But that's just the kind of form that he's been in, right? So are you going to try and get him, or are you just going to just continue to be punished?
Yeah, well, I was listening to this on the radio and they went to Fulham and they said, he's the man of the moment's done it again. And at first I was like, it's Jimenez. And then I was like, it's not Jimenez.
Not Jimenez, no.
Yeah, oh. And then, yeah. So that wasn't very fun. But I... maybe being stubborn, I'm going to avoid him for now. My plan is Enzo to Wilson around 28, I think, because Wilson, there's like a Burnley fixture in the blank game week, or the potential blank game week, sorry. So yeah, like you, I will be waiting, quite happy with my midfield, and probably do Enzo to Wilson in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, and the benefit of players like Harry Wilson, of course, is the lack of midweek game time that they have to play. So we're getting a lot more time in the Premier League out of these guys. Shout out to West Ham in this one. I think we have to talk about your Bowen pick, because obviously he's done incredibly well in this one.
And about
West Ham,
time.
It is about time. Time, yeah. West Ham, obviously the last minute winner against Spurs in game week 22, I think has been a bit of a catalyst for some change. They've got players back from AFCON. The new signings actually look really good.
Yeah, the two strikers, yeah.
Yeah, they've made a massive difference, because not only are they good in themselves, but they're allowing Bowen to play in the position that he wants to play in, rather than being forced to play out of position, which I think has helped him as well. I'm still not convinced that I want to invest in West Ham, despite the fact that that's now two wins on the bounce. Because when I look at the fixtures, obviously it's Chelsea up next. There's a nice game in there against Burnley, which they will see as a six-pointer and should be seen as a six-pointer in the kind of battle at the bottom. But then after that, Manchester United, Bournemouth, Liverpool, Fulham, Man City, Aston Villa. That is a difficult run of fixtures for West Ham. So despite the upturn, I think I'm going to avoid. Are you going to keep Jarrod Bowen for that run?
I can tell you, as a Chelsea fan, he will have
for Burnley
a lot of joy against us on the weekend. Like, as you saw against Palace, you saw Mateta charging through the middle there, Sanchez making loads of saves. I think over the last six, or before game week 23, over the last six, we were the worst team for XGC and big chances conceded over the last six. And then Burnley, Man United, Bournemouth. I mean, Bournemouth are conceding goals for fun.
Burnley do as well, to be fair.
Yeah, so I'll be keeping him probably until 28 when Thiago plays Burnley.
That makes
moving
sense.
In there. And obviously it's impossible to ignore the Paqueta speculation, which is obviously why Bowen took a penalty. So that is another string to his bow.
For sure. Before we move on from Sunderland, a shout out to Brian Broby. This is his third goal in his last four starts. He's their top scorer so far this season now. Five goals and an assist since game week 16 when he became a regular starter. He is definitely a player that we could put on our radar for forwards, because he's, you know, significantly cheap and definitely an option, despite the fact that Sunderland aren't scoring a huge amount of goals. This is an away game. Sunderland have been very different at home and away. When they go home again at the weekend, I would expect there to be an upturn in their performance. And then the final game of the game week was Everton versus Leeds. I was disappointed in this one. I was really hoping for something from Calvert-Lewin. And again, much like with Timber, I was going, please let Calvert-Lewin have had a touch on that ball. And I can't tell you how many times I rewatched it to see whether I could see anything of it. But no, there wasn't. He had one off the post. I did feel really unlucky as a Dominic Calvert-Lewin owner, because had he scored one of them, that would have turned my arrow green. Stack has now created four big chances and got defensive contributions in four of his last five appearances. So Leeds doing all right and still look like, you know, a team to invest in this one. He had DEFCON and assist and some bonus points. I think the broader conversation is around Everton, though. Tarkowski, Defcons again. That's 34 for him this season in 17 of 23 matches. And then there's Barry. And we've been talking about the lack of forwards over this podcast a lot. He's now scored in 4 of his last 5 matches. He's owned by under 1% of managers. And he's got 31 points in his last 5.
Yeah, he's loving life.
Should we just look at him?
Yeah, well, he did more celebrations than he scored goals this season, I think. He did about 6, I counted. But yeah, he's been doing really well. Just looking at Everton's fixtures, they do toughen up a little bit. They've had some good ones recently. And obviously Barry's cashed in there.
But even then, it's defences I would expect them to be able to get at. So Brighton aren't really keeping clean sheets. Fulham have the opportunity to concede. Bournemouth, Manchester United, Newcastle, Burnley. Like, there's definitely some teams in there that the Everton attack can penetrate the defences of.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, I'm looking at his numbers. They're not massive numbers. He scored 4 goals from an XGI of, I think, less than 1.
I can't convince you then.
Not for me. I mean, like, you own Calvert-Lewin. Would you swap them?
Maybe. I mean, I'm thinking about swapping him for Joao Pedro. That's the swap I'm thinking about making.
Yeah, I think
just targeting the fixtures over the next few weeks. But I think Barry is definitely an option. He's cheap. If I want to keep investment low, like, I think for managers that are looking at, like, needing to find some money from somewhere to get Bruno Fernandes, like, if you're trying to get up from a really cheap fifth midfielder, like, if you've got Potts or somebody sitting in your fifth midfielder slot and you really need to find some budget, then Barry does not look like a bad option at all in that forward line. Same with Broby. I think, you know, you could go there with those guys, free up some money and use it to invest and improve your midfield. Because to be honest, it feels like the midfield are where we need to be spending all of our investment. Do you know what? Watching this one last night, I was also really impressed with Ndai. I think he came back from AFCON. He looks like he's going to pick up where he left off. But can I find a slot for him? It's too difficult. That midfield, genuinely, there's like 8 players you could pick in those 5 spots. And every week, for me, it's Harry Wilson. I'm watching him thinking, you're going to punish me because I can't get you into my top 5 slots. And I think that's why people will be looking to be a bit more different with their forward line moving forward. I don't mind the Barry pick, but I think I would prefer Joao Pedro for the next few.
Yeah, same. Right, that's all 10 games. This week is a busy midweek in the world of football. The league stage of the Champions League comes to an end on Wednesday. And then you've got the Europa League doing likewise on Thursday. So patience. If you haven't already made your moves, I'm being slightly hypocritical here, but if you haven't made your moves yet, probably wait until after Wednesday and Thursday. Make sure there's no European injuries, unless, of course, you have the wildcard chip active, like a few managers do.
Yeah, Jules Kelly and I are going to be back on Thursday. We'll be looking ahead to game week 24, focusing how to invest in the fixtures between clubs like Manchester United and Chelsea, as well as talking about what to do with Manchester City, especially if you have too many Manchester City players in their teams like Jules does.
If you haven't already, don't forget to join the FPL Pod Mini League. The code is XY6XPL. Sam, it's been great making my off-the-bench debut. Occasionally, you do have to go to the third sub, get that joke in, especially with it being called off-the-bench. Great to pod with you, and best of luck in Game Week 24.
I do feel like we should have made you sing a song, like the players do when they join a new club. Maybe that's one for next time.
It will end
Green Arrows, Tom. Yeah. Good luck, everyone.